mattina uscite con qualche cosa.
No, ma io ne ho parlato un po' anche con il ministro, abbiamo avuto occasione, sulle loro situazioni, sono
un po'. No, 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 io sono ascoltato
con l'operazione
con il consorzio.
Thank you. Your friend of mine. Everybody's looking at the mission. That's nice.
Yeah, I think so.
The mission is actually a good place to work.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of work to do. I mean, I don't know.
Excellencies, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, we don't have any football game in parallel, so I just don't understand where are all the other delegates, but I hope they will come, and when we start, they will definitely come. It is my pleasure to welcome you to this ministerial dialogue of the High-Level Political Forum on a universal integrated policy agenda to implement RioPlus20 and realize the future we want. Allow me to make 3 points. First, we all agree that the post-2015 development agenda must integrate economic, social, and environmental dimensions in a balanced way. It is already clear that the agenda will complete the unfinished business of the SDGs. It will also include goals and commitments in the environmental and economic areas. How do we reflect this balanced and integrated character as we develop the broader post-2015 development agenda? Second, we also agree that the post-2015 agenda will be universal. For all countries, implications go way beyond development cooperation issues. It is important to understand how countries at various levels of development will reflect the SDGs and agenda in their domestic policies. Third, once the agenda is agreed, will our UN processes be able to deliver coherent and integrated elements that bring us implementation and, most importantly, universality? To illuminate the subject, we have with us now a truly distinguished panel of speakers. Her Excellency Nana Oye Litur, Minister for Gender, Children and Social Protection of Ghana. His Excellency Mr. Yoon Song-kyu, Minister of Environment of the Republic of Korea. Ms. Sylvia Velo, Undersecretary for Environment, Land and Sea of Italy. And I'm very pleased to have him with us here, His Excellency Yanis Potocnik, European Commissioner for Environment. And I'm also pleased to welcome Ms. Helen Clark, the wonderful administrator of the United Nations Development Programme. She will be the moderator of this afternoon's dialogue. Thank you very much for coming and being with us here. And I would also like to welcome our lead discussants, His Excellency Paluki Masina, Minister and Secretary General of the Government of Togo. His Excellency Federico Ramos de Armas, Vice Minister for Environment of Spain. His Excellency Liu Jieyi, Permanent Representative of China to the United Nations. And Mr. Martin Chung-gong, Secretary General of the Inter-Parliamentary Union. And I now turn the meeting over to Ms. Helen Clark to moderate the dialogue, please.
Thank you very much to the President of ECOSOC for the welcome and introductions of our very distinguished panel members. And can I join the President in welcoming everyone to this high-level political forum on sustainable development dialogue on a universal and integrated agenda to implement Rio Plus 20. The Rio Plus 20 outcome document agreed by UN member states in June 2 years ago made it clear that future development agendas should encompass all three strands of sustainable development. And the member states agreed that sustainable development goals should be designed to be coherent with and integrated into the UN development agenda beyond 2015. This was very timely, as by the following year, 2013, the debate over what should be in the post-2015 agenda was in full swing. Guided by Rio Plus 20, our member states have since then agreed that there should be a single, unified, and universal post-2015 agenda. And I believe that conclusion reflects the reality that development gains won't be sustained if the very environment on which life depends is wrecked in the process. The impact of climate change is making this increasingly obvious. Every year we see ever more extreme weather events ending lives and wiping out years of development progress, sometimes in just a matter of hours, as we saw late last year from the Philippines, and then later the Solomon Islands this year to Bosnia and Herzegovina, Serbia, Croatia, and Paraguay. It's across the continents and the regions. The need to act on climate change and build adaptation and resilience to it into development strategies and actions is clear if economic and social progress is to be maintained. It will be challenging to negotiate a universal post-2015 agenda, applicable to all countries, yet suited to the particular context of each. Yet the universality reflects our interdependence on the one planet we share. Whether the issue is extreme poverty, climate change, dwindling biodiversity, high inequalities, or crime and violence, we are all affected one way or the other. Sustainable development goals and targets will have to be relevant to these challenges and tackle the drivers of these challenges. They should reflect the shared aspirations of people and countries, north and south, and large and small. Yet the post-2015 agenda will also need to differentiate between countries, reflecting different starting points and capacities. Developing countries have basic needs which the world has agreed must be met. There is a strong desire for the post-2015 agenda to finish the unfinished business of the MDGs and to leave nobody behind. The objective is no less than poverty eradication, and achieving that will mean all countries being able to enjoy peace and stability and the rule of law and to have governance which is capable of delivering the services citizens need. So in this hour and a quarter we have available to us, I very much look forward to our panelists and discussants covering these and many related issues. As we begin the interactive panel discussion, I would ask our distinguished panelists to endeavour to keep their remarks to no more than 5 minutes to allow for discussion with the audience. I want to begin with giving the floor to the European Union's Environment Commissioner and to remind us all that the EU is the world's largest official development assistance donor. It has recently published two communications, A Decent Life for All, Ending Poverty and Giving the World a Sustainable Future, February last year, and more recently last month, A Decent Life for All, From Vision to Collective Action. So, Commissioner, I think we have foreshadowed a question to you around what the EU's vision is of the post-2015 agenda, and in particular, how you see the shift from a North-South ODA-supported agenda to a universal agenda where developed countries themselves are likely to have to commit to further policy change in their own countries. Commissioner, you have the floor.
Thank you, Helen. President Dear Martin, distinguished panel, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, when we are shaping our universal, integrated, ambitious, sustainable development agenda, we have to build on the things which we have done in the past. Rio process, the Millennium Declaration, drawing on the experience of MDGs. You would certainly remember, especially those being in Rio Plus 20, that not everybody left Rio happy with the ambition and the outcome. But if we follow the good way, which we are now all embraced to here in New York, post-2015 agenda, I think that we can really make the Rio outcome a kind of historical event. There are four key ingredients for universal, integrated, and ambitious sustainable development agenda. The first one, it's important that we really maintain a good balance between all three dimensions of the sustainable development, economic, social, and environmental part. From the European side, there are five important elements to be addressed in the post-2015 framework. Ensure basic living standards, promote the drivers for inclusive and sustainable growth, ensure the sustainable use, management, and protection of the world's natural resources and ecosystems, and to have the rights-based approach and address peaceful societies, and finally, equality, good governance, and the rule of law. The second ingredient of future agenda should be maintaining the transformative capacity of this agenda. This is really crucial. And that's why we believe that sustainable consumption and production should be a really important part of that framework. Decoupling economic growth from resource use and pollution, it's important. It's possible. If we just look 2-3 decades ago, the air quality in the European Union, it was much worse than it is today. In the meantime, economic development was continuing, but the quality of air, it's much, much better than it was in the past. So it's possible to decouple if we are serious and if we provide proper policies. Helen mentioned two communications which we have adopted recently. The last one, which we have adopted just a week ago, it's about circular economy. So we aim at creating society without waste, legally binding targets that we would get rid of practically all landfilling, legally binding targets that of all the waste which we create, 70% till 2030 would be recycled. We have also proposed from the Commission side targets of reducing food waste for minimum 30% by 2025, of reducing marine litter 30% by 2020. So we really want to do it. The third is we should make clear that we are all part of this agenda, and this agenda requires action from all of us, that it's agenda for all. We are interdependent and we have a shared responsibility. For instance, wage generation is growing almost exponentially in some emerging countries. It's still a major problem also in European Union. Lack of treatment and life cycle approaches to hazardous chemicals and products means that pollution and health risk are increasing globally. To achieve universal application in practice, of course, goals and targets setting should be for all. It should be universal. But the implementation of that universal framework should take into account different national circumstances and respect national policies, national priorities. For example, the WHO target on air quality. So we can all aspire in that direction, but we should take into account that we are on different levels and that we should probably aspire to different levels to be reached in the short term. Fourthly, and lastly, we need a global partnership. Global partnership that reflects full range of necessary national and international efforts required to implement the post-2015 framework, vision that each country has a primarily responsibility for its own development. There are three key elements which we should focus on in this global partnership: sound and coherence enabling policy environment both at domestic and international level. Second, full mobilization of all available resources, including private finance. Why I'm underlining private finance? Because it's actually really about the transformation of our societies and economies. Without private sector, we will not succeed. And third, strong accountability framework. In this respect, of course, I do consider that the high-level political forum should play a central role, as foreseen in Rio, by providing regular political leadership, guidance, review, and we should work together to make this forum live up to its important promise and also purpose. Let me conclude with the transparency which you see ahead of you. On the horizontal X, you see the quality of life. So more right you are, better it's your quality of life. On the vertical X, you see the influence on environment. Lower you are, less is your influence on environment. Normally, the countries in the development move first up. So with the quality of life, they are moving to polluting more. And then we start to think how to move down. The green area, which you see there, it's an area in which are countries where people are living well within the limits of the planet. None of the countries there. And of course, our goal here in this post-2015, it's exactly that, that we enable the least developed countries that they can move right, that they can live better, that we eradicate poverty, but at the same time that we all together do not repeat some of the mistakes which were done in the past. And for that, primary and most important, it's for us in the developed part of the world to show that we mean it and that we are serious of moving down into the green area. It's a lot on our responsibility, on the ability that we show that through the innovation, through the processes which simply lead to economic development, we can all go in the same direction. I would just like to mention that the package of the circular economy, which I have mentioned before, it's according to our estimates providing in future Europe with approximately 2.5 million additional jobs, while protecting, of course, sustainably our natural resources. And that's the vision to which we are ready to embrace. That's the vision which I hope that all of us in this room should aspire to. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner, for that very specific speech setting out European Union key strategies. And I think we all want to now go away and read more about the circular economy one, which is very, very exciting. As the lights came down to show your graph, I thought energy efficiency in action. It's quite nice, but maybe they could stay down for a little while. Can I now come to Her Excellency, the Minister for Gender, Children and Social Protection of Ghana? Minister, I think we've signalled to you that we'd be interested in how important it is for Ghana that the existing MDG agenda is strongly reflected in the future framework, and also very interested to hear your perspectives from your work with women and young people in particular, and how you think they should be featuring in the post-2015 agenda. Over to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Moderator. First, I'll interrogate what the ingredients should be for a universal, integrated, ambitious, sustainable development agenda. And since I'm a woman, I'm looking at food and basically what sort of meal globally do we want at the end of the day, and how ambitious are we prepared to be in terms of realizing a sustainable development agenda? What do we want to achieve, and what basically is our objective? From us, our perspective, one key ingredient would be an effective and efficient coordination mechanism at all levels, from the global level to the local level. That ensures that we have a synergy amongst our social, economic, environmental, and political development interventions. We must make sure that our indicators are agreed upon by consensus. We were able to do that in 2000 for the MDGs, and we achieved some success with that. And 14, 15 years down the line, we are being able to measure our success, we are being able to identify our challenges, and then we're being able to evaluate and plan for the future. And so it's important that the indicators that we come up with, we can monitor and evaluate. Within the context of Ghana, which is a lower middle income status country transitioning economically, it's very critical that globally we address inequalities, and we address more vigorously the drivers of our economic, social, and political inequalities. That is, if we want peace and security. Then also from a social development perspective, we need much more investment for our social development agenda. We must ground this agenda in human rights. Gender must be central, must be a central pillar. And then also we need to address inequalities, and particularly we need to address poverty and ensure an all-inclusive growth to create a society, an equal society or a near-equal society. We need to create social safety nets through social protection. And this is what we're doing in Ghana on social protection. We have to build on our experiences and achievements of the MDGs. And like I said, we have the evidence. Under five deaths have reduced from 12.6 million in 1990 to 6.6 million in 2012. The proportion of people living on less than $1.25 has reduced from 47% in 1990 to 22% in 2010. But we do have challenges. I've spoken about inequality. We have a widening inequality gap, and poverty reduction in Africa has not been as fast to enable us in Africa achieve MDG 1. So what does post-2015 agenda mean for us in developing countries? We have unique concerns that the sustainable development goals must address. We must look at climate change, we must look at inequalities, and a structural economic transformation. And these priorities would be very important for us. Good governance is critical. Transparency and accountability is also very critical. National leadership and political commitment to sustainable development is also critical for us. And these are the ways that will ensure that we do have our ambitious development agenda. With respect to women and the youth, in Africa, we have high percentages as far as in our demographic groups for women and then for the youth. They must be central to our agenda. We must get them to come on the table to discuss what we need to do as government, as countries, and then civil society groups must also hold government accountable. They must be part of the planning. They must also be part of the monitoring and evaluation. So we should not underrate the role of civil society in this regard. I think these are my preliminary comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister, for emphasising the importance of measurement. It's often said that what isn't measured isn't counted, so we appreciate that emphasis. Also, your inclusive approach with the role of civil society in monitoring and your emphasis on addressing the drivers of inequality and underdevelopment. I think they're very, very good points made there. Can I come next to His Excellency, the Minister of Environment of the Republic of Korea, a country which has fully integrated sustainable development perspectives into its own plans for future growth, including through the National Strategy for Green Growth from 2009 to 2050. So, Minister, we're very interested in what Korea's views are on what the post-2015 development agenda should look like and how it could help us get to ambitious targets like those being set by Korea. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you. It is my pleasure personally and as representative of the Republic of Korea to join the global effort to shape the post-2015 development agenda with sustainable development goals at its core. The first United Nations Environment Assembly took place 2 weeks ago in Nairobi, Kenya. Its high-level segment reaffirmed the value of the balanced integration of economic, social, and environmental dimensions of sustainable development and their interlinkages in a holistic, comprehensive, and coherent manner. Also, UNEA highlighted the important role of the high-level political forum on sustainable development in the future as an effective review system for the post-2015 development agenda. And I welcome and support the outcome of UNEA. The international community has endeavored to incorporate the three pillars of sustainable development for more than two decades. I understand it's easier said than done, but nonetheless, we should continue our efforts to realize sustainable development. The package of universal and integrated SDGs must have at least the following indispensable ingredients that should not be overlooked. They range from eradicating poverty, enhancing ecosystem resilience, ensuring provision of public services, such as safe drinking water, food, sewerage, sanitation, and clean energy, to providing universal access to education and healthcare, as well as improving gender equality. I'd like to touch upon, among others, a few issues that are dear to my heart. First, take poverty as an example. Around 2.5 billion people are living below poverty line globally. Poverty does not just mean economic suffering, but also environmental stress. That's because many people in underdeveloped countries still tend to rely their livelihood on the natural ecosystem, which is increasingly degraded. On the other hand, I'd like to underscore that in achieving sustainable development, the environmental factor is crucial, which is direct impact on human health. Data shows that every year, 7 million people die from air pollution and 2 million lives are lost due to waterborne disease, which is one of the leading causes of death in children under the age of 5. In particular, the underprivileged groups in our society, including women and children, are particularly vulnerable to such problems. Having said that, we need to come up with differentiated and customized national approaches and solutions for women and children. One of the ways towards global sustainable development is sustainable consumption and production, as well recognized at the Rio Plus 20 conference. Practicing SCP is like killing two birds with one stone, because it not just respects planetary boundary, but also considers our future generations whose voices are muted today. Achieving SCP has a far-reaching implication on sustainability of production and infrastructure with less use of natural assets and resources, on change of lifestyle and behavior, and on technology development and employment. Industrialized countries can show leadership in promoting the shift to SCP patterns, while developing countries can take advantage of SCP to leapfrog to more resource and energy efficient, profitable, and low carbon development pathways. Another way is, I believe, green economy, where pro-environmental investment is not lost as a sunk cost, but rather decouples economic growth from environmental impact, creating a virtuous cycle of environment protection, income gain, increased decent jobs, and social advancement. Finally, in order to synergize all these objectives, accountable, transparent, and effective governance would be a key factor. The principle of governance should not only be applied to institutional reform at the national level, but also hopefully be reflected in the global partnership in the near future. Now, I'd like to turn to the second question. There are countries where poverty eradication is desperately needed, where water scarcity becomes a critical death or survival issue, where internal conflicts or civil wars are prevailing, and so on. They all need to make and implement policies appropriately adjusted to the local, national, and regional level. The international community needs to have equitably shared but differentiated responsibilities on one hand and forge global partnerships on the other. Countries in special conditions are in need of a stronger global partnership to secure means of implementation and effectively deliver the common vision of the future we want, with close attention to the details. The future has already begun. The sustainability for the generations to come depends on how smartly and considerately our generations approach to the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister, and thank you for the inspiration which Korea's green growth strategies give us at this time. The final panelist to speak will be Ms. Silvia Vello, Undersecretary for Environment, Land and Sea of Italy, a country which has been a long-time contributor to the UN development system. Undersecretary, you have the floor.
One year to Korea. Thank you very much, Mrs. Clark, Mr. President, dear colleague. Let me first thank the President of ECOSOC and the Secretariat for inviting me to address this meeting and this specific issue which brings us immediately at the heart of the post-2015 agenda. and stimulates our reflection today on this, on its core elements. The challenges we are facing today are increasingly interconnected and relevant to all countries, all region, all people. They call for a universal and integrated approach capable of capturing the interrelation between the three dimensions of sustainability. These same challenges require an innovative culture of governance that is cross-sectoral and multidimensional, based on policy coordination and coherence, on inclusiveness and accountability. To this extent, a structured dialogue with the civil society, the private sector, the scientific institution, and the local communities is fundamental. The post-2015 agenda should ensure well-being and prosperity for all, while preserving the ecological foundation of society. Key aspects such as safeguarding of natural resource base of development, the promotion of equality and human rights, or the empowerment of women, just to mention some, should become priority issues that cross each and every area of the decision-making, from agriculture to food production, from urban development to infrastructures. The need to respect the principle of universality together with the concept of differentiation is essential to build a strong ownership of the agenda and to take into account different national situations and levels of development. There are various feasible approaches to find the right balance between universality and differentiation that needs to be further discussed within the post-2015 preparatory process. What appears to be evident is that the rigid and the traditional North-South scheme does not respond to the new challenges we are facing. A new model of cooperation is needed within the broader framework of a global partnership where everyone has its own rights and responsibilities. In introducing the ingredients of a universal, integrated, ambitious, and transformative sustainable development agenda, we consider that the recognition of the value of natural capital, including through the efficient use of resources, is a fundamental aspect. In Italy, we recognize this aspect and are committed to take immediate action. To this extent, the government has proposed to establish a national commission on natural capital with the view to introduce environmental accounting in economic and financial decision making and policy making processes. We are also exploring a national level fiscal instruments to promote the shifting of taxation from labor to resources depletion and pollution. I believe that these are good examples of integrated policy making and thus trusty ingredient to take into consideration for the new sustainable development agenda. Mr. President, dear colleagues, a universal and integrated agenda requires to build new partnership, new mechanism of governance, new approaches to join efforts and resources, new ways of understanding and measuring progress behind 2015 and behind GDP. We have an enormous task to shape an innovative model of development. Let's do our best to succeed for the people, for the planet, for the life of everyone. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Under Secretary. And it's been good on our panel to have perspectives coming in from the environmental ministries, as well as from women and children and gender in Ghana. We're now going to turn to our discussants. The first one is His Excellency, Mr. Paluki Masina, who is Secretary General of the Government of Togo. And we'd be very interested, Your Excellency, to hear of Togo's experience with MDGs to date, noting that back in 2010 you were a pilot country for what has become a very successful MDG acceleration framework approach. So we're very much looking forward to your intervention from the floor. Can we give the microphone to Togo, please?
La présidente, permettez que je profite de l'occasion pour remercier le président du Conseil économique et social et le secrétariat pour m'avoir permis de m'avoir invité et m'avoir permis de participer à cette réunion. Les questions auxquelles nous devions répondre, nous, c'est celles qui ont été déjà abordées par les autres intervenants. J'interviendrai donc en trois points. En tant que pays pauvre, quels sont les ingrédients pour un programme de développement ambitieux, universel et intégré ? Et que signifie l'agenda de développement post-2015 pour les pays à différents niveaux de développement et pour les pays se trouvant dans des situations particulières ? Et troisième point, les recommandations. Tout ce que je vais dire, Madame la Présidente, part du constat que malgré les différents programmes de développement, on assiste toujours à la pauvreté qui continue de croître, à la population qui continue également de croître, et aux ressources qui diminuent. Et dans le même temps, il y a des changements climatiques qui touchent tous les pays du monde. Alors, après ce constat, quels sont les ingrédients ? Nous pensons que pour que l'agenda post-2015 soit efficace, il faut qu'il fasse l'objet, en ce qui concerne son élaboration et sa mise en œuvre, d'une vision de développement suffisamment intégrée pour produire les transformations nécessaires afin de garantir à toutes les populations, à toutes les générations présentes et à venir, une vie décente, puisque l'ambition de l'agenda n'est plus de réduire la pauvreté, mais d'éradiquer la pauvreté sous toutes ses formes. Cet objectif n'est susceptible d'être atteint que si, entre autres, sont promus deux éléments en plus de ce qui a été dit par les autres, une croissance de meilleure qualité et un nouveau partenariat que l'on peut qualifier de responsable parce que équitable et humaniste. La qualité de la croissance. Il faut que l'agenda post-2015 prenne son sens. Il faut qu'il permette une croissance qualitative et durable de l'économie. Ce qui signifie qu'il faut aller au-delà des services sociaux de base pour agir sur tous les vecteurs d'un développement inclusif et à fort effet multiplicateur, créateur d'emplois décents et pérennes. Et surtout sans conséquence sur la dégradation de l'environnement. Sans cette croissance, eh bien, il y aura toujours des pays en retard et on reviendra vers la fin. Le deuxième élément, c'est un nouveau partenariat mondial pertinent pour l'ensemble des acteurs de développement. C'est un objectif difficile à atteindre, mais le nouveau partenariat dans l'agenda post-2015 devrait réformer profondément la gouvernance et la coopération internationale dans le sens de la démocratie, de la transparence, de la responsabilité et de l'inclusion afin de créer un environnement inclusif, incitatif et un soutien permettant aux pays de réaliser les transformations structurelles afin d'atteindre les objectifs de développement durable. Ce nouveau partenariat, pour l'atteindre, je pense qu'il faut passer par la révision des traités et des accords commerciaux et d'investissement. Il faut envisager l'annulation de la dette. Il faut réformer les institutions financières et économiques internationales. Et il faut renforcer le dispositif institutionnel de gouvernance du développement durable. Deuxième point, un nouveau partenariat. Donc, dans ce nouveau cadre, le rôle des entreprises privées, nationales, multinationales doit être encadré par des principes directeurs universels afin de promouvoir la cohérence de leurs pratiques pour le développement, leur responsabilité sociale et leur coopération avec les autres acteurs. La définition, deuxième point, la définition d'un agenda de développement post-2015 unique et universel, tenant compte des spécificités naturelles, est une priorité. C'est vrai, les problèmes sont globaux et tous les pays les subissent. Mais pour un développement durable, il faudra donc tenir compte des spécificités et c'est un défi pour les pays pauvres. Le futur agenda des Nations Unies est donc une source d'espoir pour tous les pays. Cependant, compte tenu du principe de la responsabilité commune mais différenciée, les rôles et les responsabilités des pays, selon qu'ils soient développés, émergents, en développement ou en situation particulière, ne seront pas les mêmes. Ainsi, pour les pays en situation particulière, notamment les pays en situation de conflit ou de sortie de crise, comme le Togo, l'agenda post-2015 devrait a priori créer les conditions d'un rattrapage par la remise à niveau des capacités sérieusement dégradées. L'erreur des programmes passés résidait en effet dans le fait qu'ils s'imposaient de la même manière à tous les pays sans tenir compte de l'état de leur administration et des compétences dont ils disposaient. Le Togo, conscient des déficits en matière de capacité causés par une longue crise économique, 1991-2010, considère le renforcement des capacités dans ces trois dimensions que sont le développement organisationnel, la valorisation des ressources humaines, le renforcement institutionnel comme crucial pour la mise en œuvre de ces engagements au titre du développement durable. Le processus d'élaboration d'un programme de renforcement des capacités et de modernisation de l'État pour le développement de l'État en cours au Togo, avec le soutien de tous ses partenaires, permettra d'accélérer la transition vers un développement durable. Les recommandations, elles ont trois fondements. La soutenabilité des nouvelles exigences liées à l'agenda post-2015 reposera d'abord sur la rationalisation des organes de gouvernance chargés de l'impulsion des politiques. Ensuite, la restauration des normes organisationnelles et des procédures administratives pour un maximum d'efficacité. Enfin, la meilleure disposition possible des ressources humaines, au point de vue de l'acquisition et du développement des compétences, ainsi que l'implication des autres acteurs, ONG, sociétés civiles et partenaires. Partant de ces fondements, nous faisons quatre recommandations. Il faudrait qu'en tenant compte de la spécificité des pays les moins avancés, nous suggérons que, première recommandation, que les États fragiles et les pays en situation de post-conflit puissent disposer d'une période de 3 à 5 ans durant l'agenda post-2015 pour mettre à niveau les capacités et compétences nationales susceptibles de soutenir les exigences nouvelles du développement durable avant de s'engager dans l'exécution d'un programme universel qui sera arrêté. Deuxième recommandation, que la communauté internationale soutienne fermement cette politique de renforcement multiforme des capacités et une fois que cela sera accompli, les pays pourront s'engager sans risque dans le programme de développement durable. Troisième recommandation, que des indicateurs clairs et faciles à mettre en œuvre soient établis de manière à suivre régulièrement les progrès réalisés par les uns et les autres. Et quatrième recommandation, que les mécanismes de suivi et évaluation soient annualisés et différenciés par objectifs cibles, sans préjudice et de ceux prévus pour l'agenda dans toute sa globalité. Voilà, sans aller dans le détail, vu le temps qui m'est imparti, Madame la Présidente, les observations liminaires que je voulais faire au nom du Togo. Merci.
Thank you very much for a very clear outline from Togo with a strong emphasis on the support required for building capacities. and also for differentiation according to country context in the new agenda. Second discussant is His Excellency the Vice Minister for Environment of Spain, a country which has put a great deal of effort into MDG achievement, including through the MDG Achievement Fund made available to the UN Development System. Vice Minister, you have the floor.
Distinguidos panelistas, estimados delegados, es un honor poder participar en este foro. España está firmemente convencida de que la agenda post-2015 debe ser universal, con objetivos globales comunes que impliquen a todos los países. Estamos ante nuevos desafíos que requieren actuaciones globales y conjuntas. Ahora, con matices. Universalidad sí, pero con diferenciación. Creemos que el objetivo de la universalidad aplicable a la agenda y a los principios que nos inspiran deberá modularse con metas nacionales diferenciadas para los distintos objetivos. Universalidad sí, siempre que sea asumida por los distintos países. Debemos asegurar que la nueva agenda sea asumida por los países, que son finalmente los que tienen que aplicarla, respetando las diferentes realidades nacionales. Y universalidad sí, pero con inclusión. Nuestro objetivo debe ser que nadie se quede atrás en la búsqueda del bienestar y que el desarrollo sea respetuoso con los límites de nuestro planeta para construir una sociedad justa, cohesionada y solidaria. Si queremos lograr un cambio de paradigma profundo que aprenda de los errores cometidos en el diseño y aplicación de los Objetivos de Desarrollo del Milenio, la futura agenda debe abordar la relación entre pobreza y sostenibilidad. En nuestra opinión, el objetivo fundamental de la agenda debe ser la erradicación de la pobreza y centrarse en las personas. En concreto, para nosotros los siguientes elementos son fundamentales en la agenda post-2015. Uno, debemos asegurar el enfoque basado en los derechos humanos y la igualdad de género, y también en la paz, la seguridad, la democracia y la buena gobernanza que no fueron contemplados en los Objetivos de Desarrollo del Milenio y que ahora se deben integrar. Dos, debemos también incluir el objetivo fundamental de la conservación de nuestro patrimonio natural como medio para alcanzar un crecimiento económico inclusivo que asegure la creación de empleo digno. Solo así conseguiremos una sociedad cohesionada capaz de proporcionar los servicios sociales básicos, la seguridad alimentaria, la educación, la salud, el agua y el saneamiento. Recientemente he tenido la oportunidad de participar, junto con otros ministros de Medio Ambiente, en Nairobi, en la primera Asamblea Universal de Medio Ambiente del Programa de Naciones Unidas para el Medio Ambiente. Los ministros alzaron su voz para que la sostenibilidad del medio ambiente constituya una parte central del nuevo consenso de desarrollo. Los nuevos objetivos de desarrollo sostenible deben responder a estos desafíos. La idea de una economía circular, de la que hablaba el comisario europeo y hoy panelista Janez Potocnik, que desligue el crecimiento económico de un consumo más intenso de recursos, debe ser una respuesta. Y tres, por último, debe ser una agenda que movilice recursos más allá de la ayuda oficial al desarrollo. Debe priorizar la movilización de recursos nacionales, la financiación innovadora y la participación del sector privado. Finalmente, les diría que es imprescindible que además prestar la atención que merecen los países menos adelantados. No debemos olvidar también las dificultades propias de los países de renta media, en particular los SIDS, y de los países sin litoral, que deben desempeñar un papel fundamental en la nueva agenda. La Asamblea General designó 2014 como Año Internacional de los Pequeños Estados Insulares en Desarrollo. Es la primera vez que las Naciones Unidas dedican un año internacional a un grupo de países. Este hecho es una oportunidad inmejorable para que la comunidad internacional considere las cuestiones que son esenciales en estos países, en especial su vulnerabilidad ante catástrofes naturales, la pérdida de biodiversidad o la amenaza a su propia supervivencia debido a los efectos del cambio climático. En ese sentido, la conferencia de Samoa, que se celebrará en septiembre y a la que deseamos el mayor de los éxitos, se convertirá sin duda alguna en un hito no solo para los SIDS, sino para todo el sistema de Naciones Unidas. Estimados delegados, podemos proporcionar a los habitantes de este planeta los medios para un modo de vida digno y contribuir con ello a la erradicación de la pobreza sin comprometer el medio ambiente. En nuestra opinión, un desarrollo que no respete el medio ambiente no puede llamarse a futuro más veces desarrollo. España seguirá jugando un papel destacado y constructivo en este empeño de seguir construyendo un futuro mejor. Muchas gracias, Presidenta.
Thank you very much to the Vice Minister for Environment of Spain, and especially for your emphasis on the small island developing states, taking into account that the third UN SIDS conference is positioned just before the high-level events at the UN in September. Our third discussant is His Excellency the Permanent Representative of China to the United Nations. It's well known that China has made the most extraordinary gains in lifting people out of extreme poverty. So we would like to hear from the Permanent Representative how China, as a rapidly growing, now middle-income country, sees the future development agenda and its relevance to its own development trajectory. Your Excellency, you have the floor.
谢谢你，Moderator。我首先感谢你介绍我国取得的减贫方面的成就。我很高兴出席今天的对话会，就落实里约加20大会成果，展望2015年后发展议程，与各位进行交流。 2012年里约加20大会成功举行，大会成果文件《我们憧憬的未来》指明了全球实现可持续发展的方向，明确了指导原则、重点领域、执行手段等等。当前最重要的是以共同但有区别的责任为指导， 将政治共识全面转化为具体行动。国际社会应认真总结千年发展目标的经验教训，在规划未来可持续发展时引以为鉴。发展中国家实现可持续发展，普遍面临资金不足、技术手段缺乏、能力建设偏弱等困难， 亟待国际社会提供更切实有效的帮助。国际金融经济危机迟滞了全球发展进程，各国应加大宏观经济政策协调力度，为可持续发展营造良好的外部环境。作为里约加20大会的重要成果， 可持续发展高级别政治论坛自去年9月成立以来，已经初步承担起指导全球可持续发展进程、监督落实各项承诺的历史重任。政治论坛诞生于国际发展合作承上启下的关键时期，既要立足当下， 做好落实里约加20大会的后续工作，更要着眼未来，真正成为发展领域的核心机制。中方认为，政治论坛应重点强化以下职能：一是监督，通过定期审议等方式审查联合国经济、社会 和环境领域重要会议成果的后续落实；二是整合、增进联合国系统各机构 协同性和一致性，提高发展资源利用效率。三是交流，鼓励各方加强可持续发展政策协调，分享经验做法。展望2015年后发展议程，中方认为应坚持以下原则：一是坚持将消除贫困和促进发展作为核心；二是坚持共同但有区别的责任原则；三是坚持发展模式多样化原则；四是坚持统筹平衡发展原则，全面协调推进经济、社会和环境发展；五是坚持成员国主导、协商一致的原则。六是坚持普遍性原则的同时，充分考虑到各国不同的国情、能力和发展阶段。2015年后发展议程应加强全球发展伙伴关系，制定完善的执行手段，保障发展资源，确保相关目标得以实现。谢谢。
Thank you very much, Ambassador of the People's Republic of China, and thank you also for emphasizing the importance of integration of effort and coherence in the United Nations development system as well in support of the new agenda. Last but not least, I come to Martin Chungong, the Secretary General, new Secretary General, congratulations, of the Inter-Parliamentary Union. And who better than Martin to offer a perspective about the contribution of parliamentarians around the world to designing the Sustainable Development Goals, and how organisations like the IPU can help further the global discussion and debate around this. Martin Chungong, you have the floor.
Hello, thank you. Thank you, Helen, thank you for giving me the floor. I welcome this opportunity on behalf of the parliamentary community to contribute to the debate. This is a far cry from what obtained when the current MDGs were crafted. They had little or no input from parliaments. I am here, therefore, to contribute a parliamentary perspective to the discussions, and because of the limited time, I want just to limit myself to a few comments in respect of the universality that we're aiming for in the next development agenda. And I just want to throw a few points here so that we can reflect in a more deeper, in a deeper manner what we mean by universality and how we can internalize this within the discussions. And for us, the parliamentary community, we think that universality means reuniting people with nature. And I was very interested in what the EU Commissioner said, where he said that what is required is a decoupling of economic growth from the environment. I think he referred to relative decoupling, but I would like to say that this decoupling has to be in absolute terms. And what do we mean by this? We want to say that whatever development agenda is crafted for post-2015, it has to aim to achieve well-being for the people, as I think the Spanish delegate said. This means that there has to be a balance to be struck, or there has to be a combination to be constructed between material comfort brought about growth and other assets such as health, education, culture, arts, and family time. We in the parliamentary community think, therefore, that it is necessary to rethink the economic model of development, that is the very concept of growth, so that we can achieve convergence between the interests of the developing countries and those of the developed countries. We should therefore think of growth as a means of enhancing the well-being for the people, because too often we see that growth has not been accompanied by well-being. And if we take the example of the work week, which 40 years ago was 40, 45 hours, and which today is still 40, 45 hours, instead of the growth in productivity, the improvement of technology, which would have meant that people will have more time, more quality time, we see people are being required to continue to work for a 40-hour week. Another aspect that we think should be addressed in the future development agenda is that of inequality. And I think this point was made by the Honorable Minister from Ghana. We believe that this agenda should address the needs of all. All have to be involved. All people have to see the benefits of development. So there is a need to strike a balance between individual and social interests. What is therefore needed to achieve all of this? We think what is needed is a social contract that leads to development of all, a social contract that leads to development that is inclusive. And how do we do this? We look at this from the parliamentary perspective, and of course we say that the new development agenda has to contain a goal related to democratic governance. The Honorable Minister of Ghana said good governance, but we say democratic governance, because we think that one of the reasons or one of the fundamental causes of exclusion which has plagued the current development framework is poor governance. What we mean by democratic governance is that there is a need for radical reform of policies, there is a need for radical reform of institutions of government and public administration, so that these institutions can be more accountable to the citizen. These institutions are more inclusive of all the views, are more representative of all the views of society. Today, what we see is that in far too many places, systems of governance are for the few and by the few. So we, the parliamentary community, think that we require institutions that are representative of all citizens, including the poor and marginalized, including both sexes, the youth, and other sectors of society. We need institutions that are designed to meet the needs of society as a whole. And that is why we are arguing that the new sustainable development agenda needs a democratic governance goal with a target that is intended to ensure that institutions of government, including parliaments, are better able to deliver to the citizens. Thank you very much, Madam Moderator.
Thank you very much, Martin, Secretary General of the Interparliamentary Union, and for stressing the importance of growth with well-being, growth which is offering the chance to reduce poverty and inequality, and of course growth with jobs. And I think you described your vision of the new agenda as being like a global social contract, and you advocated strongly for the participation of the world's legislators and peoples in framing it. Now, as is the way of the world, we have a very limited time for interaction from the floor. I do have in front of me a request from Austria, and I believe from Petra Bayer, a member of the Austrian Parliament and spokeswoman for Social Democratic Group for Global Development. You have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Of course, it's not easy to answer the question what ingredients are necessary to create a good sustainable development agenda. I think there is no recipe how to make the SDGs delicious for every tongue, everywhere, but I'm quite convinced that there are two essential ingredients that help to generate appetite for a future-proof global agenda on a broad basis. And in this sense, I want to underline the statement of IPU we just heard. I'm convinced that democratic governance and rule of law shall be a kind of backbone for this agenda, so that every individual human being everywhere in the world can rely on his or her rights. And second, I'm convinced that we must not forget about the inclusion of important stakeholders in creating, implementing, and evaluating the new agenda in every country. And who could do that more effective as empowered parliamentarians in cooperation with strong organizations associated with parliamentarians, such as Supreme Audit and Ombudsman institutions. MPs are quite close to their constituencies, and they know about the needs of people, and I think that they also are able to transport the spirit of this new global agenda. The outcome document of RioPlus 20 tells that it is important to include many stakeholders for the design, the implementation, and the evaluation of the SDGs. And so I welcome that there is a very broad approach to the high-level political forum on sustainable development, including, for instance, the UN, governments, international institutions, NGOs, the private sector, and many more. But please don't forget about the institutional inclusion of parliaments, of national parliaments, of regional parliaments, of subnational parliaments, and their organizations in this process. Because I'm convinced that the inclusion of MPs will contribute to the success of our common future agenda, and will create a broader basis where we can build on. Thank you.
Thank you very much for another strong parliamentarian voice at our proceedings today. Can I now give the floor to the representative of South Africa?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, South Africa views development as a continuum, and we are of the view that it is imperative that we build on the past progress and intensify our efforts to achieve the MDG by its 2015 target date. In building on the progress accomplished to date, we also need to address the unfinished business of the MDG beyond 2015. In this regard, we need to draw, Madam Chair, on the commitment and obligation that have been made in the international fora. Financing for development remains one such obligation. Developing countries need a development agenda beyond 2015 that builds on the MDG and allows for the creation of jobs in order to eradicate poverty and address income inequalities. In order to do so, Madam Chair, an enabling global governance system that makes this possible is required. South Africa maintains that it is important to acknowledge that countries have different starting points, national priorities, and regional circumstances. Therefore, the real principle of common but differentiated responsibility, along with equity and the rights to development, must be the basis on which the post-2015 development agenda is built. Means of implementation, financing, capacity building, and affordable technology access must be adequately addressed based on the real principles, especially the CBDR. Madam Chair, the international community should form a global pact through which countries in special situation should be given a technical and a financial assistance in order to diversify and transform their economies, thereby building their resilience. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much to South Africa and for reminding us of the importance of financing. And it's probably important to mention here the conference planned on development financing for Addis Ababa in July next year, which will clearly be at a critical point prior to what we hope will be finalisation of the sustainable development goals. I don't have any more speakers on my list, so I'd like to come back to our panellists and ask them if they would like to make any reaction or any comment on what they've heard either from each other or from the participants and discussants who have spoken. So, Commissioner, can I begin with you?
Sure. Thank you again. I would just like to make three brief comments. One was, which the colleague from Togo mentioned, role of the private enterprise, its social responsibility. I think it is of the vital importance what signals we are sending into the market economy system. We are today facing in the market economies a lot of market failures, and we know that. That prices in many cases are simply wrong. Corporate sustainability reporting, natural capital accounting, going beyond GDP. So fundamentals of our decision making are very important to be addressed. That's why I joined my voice to his call. From the gentleman who was basically, in a way, underlining the importance of decoupling and what I basically meant. This is one of important academic debates. Either we need absolute decoupling or relative decoupling. By the way, the example which I gave, the example of air quality improvement while we were in the meantime growing, it's a clear example of absolute decoupling. It's not relative decoupling. I can say that we can if we wish, but this is my personal remark, that nobody would take it as a remark of European Union. We can talk about that if we need absolute or relative decoupling as long as you wish. But in essence, that's not the question, because we don't have any other possibility than absolute decoupling. It's the matter of physics. It's not the matter of soft economic laws. And like it or not, we will have to go into that direction. And the third comment, it's just that I think we are really all together engaged in a really good process. I would like to praise the work of intergovernmental process, of the chairs of the open working groups, of the products which are currently on the table. I think they have really put a lot of endeavor and a lot of good work into that, which is, by the way, showing a lot of readiness of all of us who are here in the room that we go into the direction of eradicating poverty in all its dimensions and also going sustainable way, because simply one without another, it's impossible. All that what we are working, it's at the end the trust building. We have to build that trust. And by the way, also what the gentleman from South Africa mentioned at the end, commitments, obligations which were done in the past should be kept. Yes, it's part of the trust building. But we have to work all together on that trust building, and that's why in the European Union we are so much endeavoring in that we would like to show with our policies, which we are delivering, that we mean business, we mean seriously. We do not talk just about goals and targets on the table. We want to deliver the policies. We want to do the change, because change, it's absolutely necessary. We have no other way. Responsibility of all of us in the 21st century, it's incomparable to the responsibility of people who lived on this planet 100 years ago.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Can I now come to the Minister for Gender, Children and Social Protection of Ghana for her final comment?
Yeah, thank you very much. I believe we've had very interesting discussions. The first thing is that the post-2015 agenda, like one of us said, we need to strengthen the development processes and actually meet the needs of the people. The goals must be relevant for the people. The people matter. We need to address inequalities and, one of us says, strike the balance between the individual and the social interests. Then also democratic governance. That is more representative, that is more inclusive, and that is also more accountable and transparent. At the end of it all, it's about the people. Let's make it relevant for the people and for our future generations, and preserve the environment.
Thank you so much. Can I now ask the Minister of Environment, Republic of Korea, for his final comment?
Thank you very much, moderator. Responding to the intervention made by Spanish delegate, I'd like to make some comment on universality and integration of the SDGs. With regard to the concept of universality, the discussions have been around the principle of no one left behind and shared but differentiated responsibility. First, to my understanding, leaving no one behind means to consider the underprivileged in our society at the national level, the poorest and small island nations at the international level, and the future generation at the humanity level. The principle of shared but differentiated responsibility is critical in dealing especially with the environment issues. When it is applied to climate change, each country should display their full capacity, taking common but differentiated responsibility into consideration. Integration in the sustainability means to give a balanced and holistic consideration to the economical, social, and environmental dimensions, and involve cooperation among multiple stakeholders, such as public and private sectors, NGOs, and indigenous and local communities. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. And a final panel comment from the Undersecretary for Environment, Land and Sea of Italy.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. We have heard during this very interesting discussion significant contributions to answering the key question that we addressed this afternoon. Many ingredients have been proposed to build the new sustainable development agenda based on universality, integration, and ambition. We acknowledge that the post-2015 agenda has different meanings for different countries in a different stage of development. It's now up to member states to commit themselves and translate these ambitions into practice. Italy has always been committed to do so and will continue to work in this direction. The last session of the opening work group meeting on sustainable development goals will be our first significant deadline and will prove whether we will stand ready to fulfill this commitment or not. On our side, we will do our best to meet this challenge.
Thank you very much to all our panelists and everyone who has participated. I think listening to the very wide range of contributions, we know there's a great deal to take into account to get this universal integrated policy agenda to implement RIO+20. I'm a strong advocate of having a global agenda which sets priorities, and then partnerships can build around those priorities, a global partnership for the agenda as a whole, and specific partnerships around goals and targets. And those partnerships should be very inclusive, north-south partnerships, south-south partnerships, triangular cooperation partnerships. Private sector has been emphasised by several today. Our foundations, NGOs, civil societies, there's enough work for everyone in this new agenda. And the concept of partnership is critical going forward. So thank you to all panellists who've come from respective countries and regions for contributing in what will be an ongoing dialogue. Mr. President of ECOSOC, I hand the floor back to you.
Well, thank you very much. It's 4:29, so it cannot be better to hand back to, send it back to me. I thank truly thank our distinguished panelists for their interesting and truly thoughtful contributions. Also, my thanks go to the lead discussants and to the delegations and delegates who took part in the discussion from the floor. And it was a truly rich and constructive exchange of views. And again, thank you very much for having come to New York to participate in this. And my thanks obviously also go to you, Madam Helen Clark, for having been our excellent, as always, excellent moderator here. So we will have now a short pause, please. We will change the panel. We also will change the president. One of my vice presidents will come. We will continue the ministerial dialogue on the topic weaving regional realities and regional priorities into the post-2015 development agenda. Thank you very much.
We're encouraging Parliament to be inclusive of youth. There are many who are doing that, and we're bringing them together to discuss issues that are relevant to the youth. So in October, we're going to have the first global conference of young parliamentarians. And for us, young parliamentarians is 43 and below.
I'm glad because I have a saying.
Your Excellency.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We'll keep in touch, man.
Yes.
We have a saying that a youth is a person that doesn't lose their ideal.
That's right. That's right. You're only as young as your brain is.
Yes. Just a moment. Here's our card.
Okay, sure. Okay. Yeah. If you just send me
an
email.
Okay.
You want one?
No. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm from Turkey.
Yeah.
From an NGO, the German Savages Foundation.
actually, we did last May, we did an email STEM summit on UN women's perspectives on UN development agenda.
Yes.
And next year we will do another event too. At that. Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
And but maybe I get it back.
Okay.
It's not. Yeah.
Brighton's the southmost point.
Yeah. Coney Island too, I mean, it's just there. It's just Brighton is more on the cold side. I mean, they're literally right there.
I think
there,
the D train
know?
Goes there.
Hmm?
The D train goes there?
I don't know about the D, but I take the end. I mean, it's like 7 minutes. Seven, okay. 10 minutes tops. It's right there, you know. I've gone plenty of times just to read a book, you know? It doesn't have to be anything.
No, I've been thinking of buying a tent and setting up like a little tent like for a weekend or something.
There you go. You got a nice idea.
There was this big disco party. Tiki disco. Disco party at Bushwick.
What is it called?
Tiki disco. Electronic dance music.
I love it. Are you kidding me? What, when was it? Already passed? Or
yeah, Saturday. But it keeps happening like every.
You went there?
Every second week. No, I was supposed to go there, but then my friend came down and he was like, no, let's go to another thing.
Well, it's very
yeah. In fact, Museum of Modern Art is having like a lot of great parties every Saturday.
Very nice to meet you again.
All the best. We had a very good climate conference in Warsaw.
So I understand.
The Secretary of State in this ministry.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Oh Jun. I'm permanent representative of the Republic of Korea. I'm a vice president of ECOSOC. Excellencies, distinguished delegates, I now invite the forum to begin this dialogue on weaving regional realities and regional priorities into the post-2015 development agenda. The important role played by regions and regional organizations has been increasingly recognized by the international community in the past years. As the post-2015 development agenda takes shape, it is essential to acquire a good understanding of what are these regional perspectives and what are the hindrances and solutions encountered thus far in attaining sustainable development and overcoming the challenges related to the implementation. This will help policymakers to design an inclusive and bottom-up sustainable development agenda. It is thus with pleasure that I welcome our distinguished panelist, Her Excellency Olga Mata Sanchez Oviedo, Minister of National Planning and Economic Policy of Costa Rica. Ms. Shamad Akhtar, Executive Secretary of the Economic and Social Commission for Asia and the Pacific. His Excellency Marcin Korolecki, Special Envoy for Climate Change of Poland. His Excellency Anthony Mothe Maruping, Commissioner for Economic Affairs of the African Union Commission. I'm also pleased to announce that His Excellency Juan Somavia, United Nations Secretary General's Special Advisor on Interregional Policy Cooperation and Director of the Diplomatic Academy of Chile, will be the moderator of this dialogue. It is with pleasure that I also welcome our lead discussants, His Excellency Shishak Phuanketkiko, Permanent Secretary of Foreign Affairs and Acting Foreign Minister of Thailand, His Excellency Shahidur Haku, Foreign Secretary of Bangladesh, His Excellency Nasir Abdulaziz Al-Nasser, United Nations High Representative for the Alliance of Civilizations, and Ms. Gigi Francisco, Global Coordinator of the Development Alternatives for Women in the New Era and Chair of the International Studies Department of Miriam College in the Philippines, representing the major group of women. Without further ado, I now hand over the floor to His Excellency Juan Somavia.
Chair, thank you so much for this introduction. Let me go straight to the point. We are to deal with two issues. One is, what are the commonalities and differences between the priorities of the various regions for the SDGs and the post-2015 development agenda, and how we can ensure that they are appropriately addressed? And the second one is, how will the Sustainable Development Goals and the agenda impact on policies and trends in the respective regions? If I had to synthesize the issue, I would say it's about being able to determine what is the value added from a regional perspective of what will be decided in September 2015. And when I put it in this perspective, I do so with a sort of sense of a feeling of regions, particularly I would say developing country regions, with a situation of very much sense of identity, of self-assurance, of autonomy, seen in the response to the financial crisis, in which a lot of decisions were made autonomously and certainly not in the framework of how issues would have been dealt in other crises. Also, a greater use of policy space available, a will and capacity to define independent and autonomous policies in the context of the region, in the context of international cooperation. But one can see that the financial crisis and the complexities of the door round are bringing both financial issues and trade issues much closer to decision-making to the region. And it's in the air that maybe eventually there will be a nation monetary and financial system. It's in the air that the Alliance of the Pacific and Mercosur are projecting themselves in Latin America towards Asia. The United States is promoting the Atlantic Partnership Alliance and the same in the Asian context. These are just some examples, not to say of the South-South evolution and the very successful meeting of the G77 in Santa Cruz. I'm saying all of this because I think that there's going to be a tendency from the regions to say, look, this is valid if the real-life processes that are going on in our countries and in our regions with the differences and the specificities are well reflected. But since this is a negotiation, we don't know whether these things are going to be there or not. So, and with this I want to end, the document will want to be universal, but it won't be comprehensive. So there are going to be in a number of issues that may or may not be in the final document that countries and regions are saying, look, be careful, because these are very important priorities for us. To the extent that they're there, great. To the extent that they're not there, we need to keep our policy space and our autonomy to be able to develop them the way we feel appropriate. So with this very rapid introduction, which is more of a political setting of the issue, I would give the floor to our first speaker, Su Excelencia Doña Olga Marta Sánchez Oviedo, Ministra de Planificación Nacional y Política Económica. Y, Ministra, quizás el tema de cómo ven los países de ingreso medio, los temas del post-2015 y los Sustainable Development Goals. Usted tiene la palabra.
Muchas gracias, señor moderador, señores panelistas, señoras, señoras. El pueblo y el gobierno de Costa Rica valoran esta oportunidad de ser una voz en el Foro de Alto Nivel sobre Desarrollo Sostenible que se celebra este año bajo los auspicios de ECOSOC. Efectivamente, vamos a comentar sobre la realidad de una nación que representa a las sociedades de renta media de América Latina. Vamos a poder comentar en algunos brevísimos minutos sobre la gestión y la vinculación de las políticas gubernamentales con nuestra realidad y nuestros compromisos, todos ellos además concordantes con el documento de trabajo de los Objetivos de Desarrollo Sostenible y la Agenda 2015 que se discute en estos foros. Nos sumamos así a la responsabilidad nacional, regional, pero también mundial de establecer iniciativas comunes para el desarrollo humano integral a nivel planetario. Voy a comentarles sobre los ejes que guían la acción gubernamental en este momento en nuestro país, que son básicamente tres: reducir la desigualdad y la eliminación de la pobreza extrema, impulsar el crecimiento económico y fomentar más y mejores empleos de calidad, luchar contra la corrupción y promover un Estado eficiente, eficaz, efectivo y además transparente. Derivado de ellos, hemos establecido una serie de prioridades a partir de las realidades y las condiciones tanto estructurales como del momento histórico que vivimos. En primer lugar, nos parece que la pobreza y en especial la pobreza extrema atentan contra los derechos humanos, impactan negativamente el dinamismo económico y tienen un resultado, muchos de ellos irreversibles en la calidad de vida y potencial de las personas y de las sociedades. Pese a que Costa Rica, como ya he mencionado, es un país de renta media y de aceptables indicadores de desarrollo humano como promedio, una quinta parte de la población durante cerca de 4 décadas vienen sufriendo el flagelo de la desigualdad y la exclusión por motivos de pobreza. Reconocemos que Costa Rica ha obtenido logros en la integración innovadora a los ciclos económicos internacionales. Este perfil debe ser consolidado, pero en paralelo y con especial énfasis, debemos trabajar en la atención integral de los productores nacionales, sobre todo quienes producen bienes agropecuarios y pesqueros, hoy en condiciones de extrema vulnerabilidad. 4 razones motivan esta prioridad: el derecho a una actividad económica sostenible que procure una vida digna, la necesidad de fijar valor agregado a la empresa pequeña y mediana, la responsabilidad de garantizar la producción alimentaria básica para el conjunto de la población nacional y, por último, la posibilidad de generar encadenamientos productivos virtuosos en los mercados nacionales e internacionales. Nuestro patrón energético y de transporte, crecientemente dependiente de los hidrocarburos, la contaminación ambiental del aire, de las aguas superficiales y subterráneas, el impacto desordenado en el territorio urbano y costero, obligan a una gestión integralmente responsable de los recursos naturales y la acción estatal reguladora ante los diferentes actores sociales públicos y privados. Tenemos en Costa Rica indicadores importantes de cobertura de salud y de educación. No obstante, enfrentamos el reto contemporáneo de mejorar la calidad y de evitar la deserción escolar, diversificar la oferta educativa y resolver las largas esperas para atención hospitalaria. El reto de la inequidad está planteado en una sociedad donde el índice de Gini ha estado lamentablemente aumentando en los últimos años. Nuestro territorio es climáticamente vulnerable y las acciones para prevenir y mitigar los desastres socionaturales originados por el cambio climático deben ser una prioridad. Este conjunto de prioridades ha llevado también a un grupo de objetivos prioritarios. En primer lugar, lograr un crecimiento económico sostenible, eliminar la pobreza extrema y reducir la desigualdad, direccionar las finanzas públicas para el crecimiento y la estabilidad económica y además que estas finanzas públicas tengan la capacidad de reducir la evasión, la elusión fiscal y la corrupción. Fortalecer a la pequeña y mediana empresa, tanto del sector primario como secundario, defendiendo los derechos de los consumidores y la sana competencia. Promover el crecimiento, dinamismo y aprovechamiento del comercio internacional de manera que este sea una posibilidad inclusiva, equilibrada y articulada. Mejorar el sistema de infraestructura para el transporte de personas y materiales en procura de una mayor competitividad y mejor calidad de vida. Implementar una educación para la vida que fomente la creatividad e innovación y potencie el desarrollo humano. Aumentar la generación de empleo de calidad e inclusivo. Mejorar el estado físico, mental y ambiental de la población. Promover la cultura como gestora del desarrollo y la cohesión social. Contribuir a la seguridad alimentaria y a la calidad de vida de las familias, productoras agropecuarias y pesqueras. Fortalecer la seguridad nacional con la prevención de la violencia y el delito y mejorando el sistema penitenciario sobre la base de un enfoque de derechos humanos. Fomentar el desarrollo nacional integral e inclusivo basado en la innovación a través de la articulación, la ampliación y la apropiación de la ciencia, la tecnología y las telecomunicaciones. Mejorar la calidad de vida de las personas con la promoción de asentamientos humanos con un enfoque integral de seguridad, bienestar y gestión de riesgo. Asegurar el abastecimiento de agua potable con continuidad y calidad y el saneamiento de la población nacional. Para ello hemos definido también una serie de condiciones de para consecución de los objetivos que en aras del tiempo no los voy a señalar. Simplemente quería concluir señalando que para nosotros nos parece importantísimo este foro porque es un espacio político para que los países en vías de desarrollo, particularmente con un perfil de renta media, puedan exponer su naturaleza, sus condiciones y la importancia que sigue teniendo para nosotros formar parte de un foro internacional, de un foro mundial, donde la cooperación y la coordinación se valoren como un factor fundamental para el relacionamiento de los diferentes países. Porque además consideramos que son estos espacios los que ofrecen precisamente un ámbito inigualable para implementar acuerdos que nos lleven a un mejor futuro común. Y porque creemos que es necesario, en el contexto de la discusión de los objetivos de desarrollo sostenible, que volvemos a repensar la importancia de la alianza global renovada, verdadera y fuerte, construida a partir de esta nueva concertación a nivel global que permiten estos foros. Muchísimas gracias.
Muchas gracias, ministra. Y quisiera resaltar de los muchos puntos interesantes. Se refirió usted al proceso productivo y yo creo que eso calza con discusiones que se han tenido en otras dimensiones, incluso en el segmento anterior, de la importancia de concentrarse en la economía real. Estamos en una crisis global porque hubo demasiada concentración en la economía financiera y la verdad que muchos de los problemas que tienen las regiones hoy en día pasan por la necesidad de que la inversión sea en la economía real y que eso hay que favorecerlo de distintas maneras. Gracias por resaltar ese punto, ministra. I give now the floor to Shamshad Akhtar. And Shamshad, I think that there's one dimension which, if you were able to touch upon, it's what I've seen happening very strongly this year, which is the whole sense of inter-regional policy cooperation. These regions that are taking their own decisions, that are moving forward, but are seeing that it's also important to cooperate between them and to bring their policy experiences together, which is probably a great contribution to the thinking of the 2015 process. And I know that the Secretary General is extremely interested in having the regional inputs, and this panel is, of course, part of that. You have the floor, Shamshad.
Thank you very much. I'll try to, towards the end, touch on the points you raised. The first was, of course, I thought it would be good to share what has been the outcome of the regional consultations across the board on sustainable development. I think the first observation I'd like to make is that the regional commissions' consultations on sustainable development in their respective regions have been very rich and substantive. The outcomes of the consultation reflect many commonalities with the open working group's priorities. The region, given their characteristics and context, have, however, put forward their own specific priorities and shown maturity by forging a fair degree of consensus on the agenda. I'll start with the Africa region. There is a compact of collaboration between the Regional Commission, the AU and African Development Bank, and they have come up with about 12 goals with supportive targets. On the other hand, Latin America and Asia Pacific have identified their more specific high priorities. To quote an example, in case of Latin America, it has emphasized, placed more emphasis on structural transformation to address inequalities and natural resource governance and management. In context of Asia Pacific, our consultation spread over 2 days revealed that our region is not going to opt for identifying regional goals, but focus more on identifying the key priorities, and about 7 priorities were identified in our region: eradicating poverty, narrowing inequality, 2, sustained and inclusive economic growth, 3, gender equality and women's empowerment, 4, building resilience to multiple shocks, 5, responding to population dynamics and urbanization, 6, enhancing resource efficiency and natural resource management, and deepening regional integration and connectivity. Now, we had one tier of priorities which are really aggregate at the regional level. But given the diversity in Asia-Pacific, we had also organized sub-regional deliberations, and they revealed different levels of emphasis on different areas. For instance, in Pacific, sustaining growth in context of low economic dynamism and increased vulnerability to climate change was seen to be the most critical priority. In case of North and Central Asia, economic diversification to reduce vulnerabilities of the high dependence on volatile commodity sector is critical. Now, the idea of presenting this analysis is to share with you the broad findings, which is that we found that there is a good alignment of Asia-Pacific region's priorities and open working group proposed goals and targets in a number of areas. Region, however, emphasized more their own typical challenges with the objective of exploring if they could complement the work of open working group. Member states of ESCAP have emphasized 3 additional areas to support the primary goals of open working group. These do not feature in the open working group priorities in a more specific manner. First is the population dynamics within the region. In the region, some countries face demographic dividend and have challenges of harnessing youth bulge, while others have to deal with population aging. Asia-Pacific region faces almost half of the global disasters. The region placed emphasis on natural disasters risk reduction as a high priority. Aside from nurturing resilience to disasters and climate change, the region has recognized that building economic resilience is key, as the region has in recent decades been exposed to a range of economic, commodity, and financial shocks. Lastly, but not unique to the region, were calls to broaden and deepen regional economic integration and cooperation. This did not feature in the open working group as specifically as in our consultation. So the bottom line here is that the regional members, while they have underscored framing of overarching goals and targets at the global level, they have emphasized very much that their specific regional characteristics be kept in perspective and in going forward in implementing sustainable development agenda, we have to recognize the national and regional circumstances, priorities, and realities, and of course call that regional commission play a vital role in trying to support these national and regional priorities implementation. The next question, and very briefly, I will have few points on that. How will SDGs and the agenda impact on policies and trends in the respective regions? I think post-2015 development agenda and its implementation will require a paradigm shift in development policy making and governance. It will also call for strengthening of institutions backed by strong political commitment. So besides these overarching elements, I think it's important to recognize some specific nuances of the policies. First, I think in moving forward, we have to balance the short-termism that exclusively focuses on maximizing GDP or productivity at the expense of economic, social, and environmental sustainability with the long-term imperatives that call for investments in ecological sustainability, climate adaptation and mitigation, and social protection, and enable higher and long-term economic returns as well. Now, this is very difficult to achieve because if you are a minister of finance in a country, you are, of course, dealing with day-to-day priorities rather than looking at long-term. But if sustainable development has to be really taken seriously, we have to really be balancing in a way that we focus more on long-term priorities. Second, I think it's important that we focus on coordination amongst policy-making bodies and executing agencies to develop sustainable development strategies that integrate different pillars and balance the considerations that I've talked about. In this context, it's important to recognize that in our region, a number of countries have developed super bodies or coordinating agencies that are now analyzing the sustainable development imperatives, the sustainable development strategies, and developing plans for how to move forward. The case in point in case of China, we have the China's National Development and Reform Commission, which is playing a very impressive role in coordinating the sustainable development. I also wanted to just point out to a few more essential areas that in terms of the policy are of critical significance. Resource efficiency and productivity has to be well integrated in the policy making, followed by concrete actions as it will be facilitating balanced development. Fourth, public finance, be it taxes or expenditures, have to be supporting the priorities of the sustainable development. Private sector we all know is important, but right incentive frameworks to integrate better sustainable development in their production structures while supporting social responsibility will be critical. Finally, to support sustainable development agenda, right action on means of implementation remain a focus of deliberation with request for regional commission to set up, particularly in our case, to set up a new committee for finance, science, and technology. So I think what is going to happen from the points that I have mentioned is that as regions get more deeper into understanding the dynamics and the dimensions of sustainable development, they will be positioning themselves in different ways and will be demanding different things from the regional commissions. I'll stop here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We move then to Mr. Marcin Korolek, Special Envoy for Climate Change Poland, and maybe the issue of the European, the regional experience, the European conventions on these matters, the need to have a societal wide dimension, those sorts of issues which you are very important issues that I know you care very much for them. So please, you have the floor.
Thank you, Chairman. The post-2015 world will be organized around sustainable development goals. The 2015 agenda shall encompass in a balanced manner all three dimensions, economic, social, environmental. We have common overarching goals, but it is obvious that the priorities within those three dimensions in different regions will be different. Some of us will focus more on economic aspects like employment, like access to energy. Some will focus more on social goals as education or strengthening science policy interference. Some will focus more on environment like access to water or climate policy. What is important is that we see those global common challenges are as intersectorial, requiring adequate actions on different levels. I will now share with you some of our pan-European regional experience, particularly in environmental aspects. First, ECE Water Convention. The goal of this convention is to prevent, control, or reduce transboundary impacts of use of water and ensure sustainable, equitable management of transboundary waters. Second, ECE Aarhus Convention. Goal of the convention is to promote public access of society to environmental information and justice. The convention guarantees involvement of civil society, effective public participation, transparent, accountable governance. And third, ESPO Convention. And the goal of this convention is to deal with transboundary environmental impact assessment with the aim to increase economic development without environmental and social negative effects. Answering to the question of this panel, we have to admit that it is obvious that the differences in the way of implementation of SDGs between regions will persist. What we should focus is to regularly, maybe every year or every 2 years, meet and share between us best practices and lessons learned in order not to reinvent the wheel. While defining SDGs, we have together searched the way how to develop education to be able to change behaviors of 7 people billion now and 9 billion in 2050. Our everyday behaviors are defining our reality in economic, social, and environmental terms. This is why changing unsustainable patterns of production and consumption accordingly to the 10 years framework program on ACP is so important. We should continue and intensify our common activities within this in this field. We have also to engage all stakeholders to be able to realize our common goals of the post-2015 agenda. Without them, achievement of those goals will be simply not possible. Having this in mind, during Warsaw Climate COP last November, for the first time in the history of this process, we invited representation of business and cities to be part of the discussion of the post-2015 climate agreement. In 2050, 80% of global population will live in cities. In 1900, that was only 2%. We see what a dramatic revolutionary process has been occurring. It is obvious that without cities' leaders' full engagement, we will not be able to address the challenge of climate change and probably broadly all post-2015 goals. Thank you.
The preciseness of your presentation and sticking to the time. Thank you so much. Next, His Excellency Ambassador Anthony Maruping, Commissioner for Economic Affairs of the African Union Commission. And I have to say I'm extremely happy to see you, Ambassador. We work together very closely when you're Ambassador to the UN and to the ILO in Geneva. So welcome to this joint panel. And maybe if I can make a comment, is the decision of the African Union to move towards the notion of Africa 2063, which is truly, you know, a long-term perspective, and it might be interesting if we just say a word about that. Thank you so much. You have the floor.
Thank you very much, Juan. In my view, having made a quick comparative analysis, there are more commonalities than differences. Words, terms, or classifications or points of emphasis may differ somewhat, but the bottom lines are basically the same. Now I'll give share our regional experience. For instance, we have what is called Common African Position on Post-2015 Development Agenda, which is Africa's contribution to the formulation of the global development agenda. This is the decision of the African Union to have one voice instead of 54 to make the job a little easier for the international community. Common African position, which I will call CAP from now on, is based on very broad consultation of African stakeholders. It has been a bottom-up process. So it's really a people's document. You know, they say vox populi, vox dei. The voice of the people is the voice of God. It has been adopted by the highest body of the African Union. And Africa has already amalgamated SDGs to the Common African Position on post-2015 because after the consultations, it was decided that what was agreed in the regional consultation on SDGs should be further input into the African Common Position. So in the end, the goals may be more than 11, which was mentioned earlier, it will be more. So what are the elements? Of course, the overarching objective is poverty eradication through creation of decent jobs, reduction of inequalities, and achieving human development in general. That is done through six pillars: structural economic transformation and inclusive growth, science, technology, and innovation as number two, people-centered development, environmental sustainability, natural resources management and disaster risk management, then peace and security, and here we are talking about preventative mode of development and governance, you know, development and governance such that peace and security will not be disturbed. And then finance and partnerships. On the surface, all this fits the standard mold that has been coming through. And by the way, the order is not in order of preference or priority. But this is a bouquet. It's a package because all these elements are supporting or reinforcing one another. So they sound standard, but when you dig a little deeper, you'll find that they are Africa's own specificities. Just to take one pillar, economic transformation and inclusive growth, Africa aspires for accelerated, sustainable, stable and inclusive growth that creates decent jobs and reduces inequalities. And it is hoped that that will lead to rapid, resilient, sustainable and inclusive development. And under that, this will be done through infrastructure development in its broad context, not just transport networks and storage facilities, but also energy generation, clean energy, and ICT connectivity, and other things that would qualify as infrastructure. Sustainable agriculture, food self-sufficiency and nutrition, and accelerated industrialization. Developing the services sector, and promoting investment and intensifying private sector development, as well as accelerating integration, all of which will result in increased trade. And of course, there will be need to enhance productivity and to raise competitiveness to achieve all this. Then the second one, I will not elaborate, it's science, technology, and innovation. ECOSOC dealt with this in July in Geneva last year, Then there is people-centered development, which is education, health, all of which should be universal access with not just quantity, but quality as well. Gender equality and women development, acceleration in that area, and addressing human settlements, especially in the area of urbanization and managing population dynamics. The fourth is environmental sustainability, natural resource management, disaster management, risk management. I have already said peace and security talks about the manner of development and governance, which is inclusive to make sure that conflict is obviated. Then there is financing and partnerships with emphasis on domestic resource mobilization. It should be noted that gender equality and women empowerment and youth empowerment and engagement and sustainability issues or considerations do not leave our radar screen. They are cross-cutting. They are enablers such as good governance, transparency, accountability, functional institutions, rule of law, adherence to human rights, and prudent macroeconomic policies, which were discussed this morning. So really, a common African position is framed in such a way that it has universal appeal. And these CAP elements or contents are found in various places of SDGs from other regions. If you look, they may be classified differently, but they may be expressed differently, but they are there. Now, to answer the question, how do we go about really putting all these together? And once again, I've seen more commonalities than differences, and I'm sure where there are differences, there will always be a solution. This is the forum for doing that, as it has been done in the past. And the work of the open working group so far show that this is achievable and we are almost there. We hope there will be no spoilers at the last moment. We see a lot of convergence between the work of the open working group and the common African position on post-2015 development agenda. But also, I think what will be agreed upon the SDGs and the post-2015 development agenda, it's a framework. A framework is different from a roadmap, it's more loose. Framework, plan of action, program of action. Plan of action, program, they are very specific. But framework leaves ample room for policy space. You know, it forms parameters. So it accommodates regional, sub-regional, and national peculiarities and specificities. And out of the framework, well, then you can unfold action plans, program of action at national or sub-regional level. So weaving should be very manageable. Now, we have already said that SDGs on the African side, the SDGs and post 2015 have already been combined, even though the SDGs have been submitted in accordance with Rio Plus 20 requirements. But what the African region is bringing is one voice where the two have already been combined. Now, the question of ownership is very important now on how it will impact. If regional positions are based on intensive and extensive consultation with stakeholders, it will be easy to merge them into policy, to mainstream them into policy. Because participation, inclusion, it leads to ownership. And when you have ownership, there is commitment. And where there is commitment, there will be a faithful implementation of what has been agreed upon. Clarity of agreed goals, targets, indicators, plus an effective monitoring and evaluation mechanism should enable easy integration and mainstreaming into policies and programs. Lastly, to just 1 minute to talk about 2063, as our moderator has mentioned. African common position rhymes or is consistent with Africa Agenda 2063. Now, Agenda 2063 is Africa's own strategic framework for the next 50 years. And it is based on broad consultations also, but existing frameworks and programs that are already there, plus existing sub-regional frameworks, you know, like regional economic communities, their strategic plans and frameworks, as well as national strategic plans. All these have been put together, plus interactive website where anybody can make a contribution. So this will be the vehicle that will carry post 2015 development agenda, not only for the 15 years but beyond, and it will be a living document that will have to be revised every now and then to make sure that it takes the dynamics and the terrain that is changing over time every now and then. So I'll stop here and say this is the contribution from Africa. So we have three documents: SDGs, Common African Position on post 2015 development agenda, and Africa Agenda 2063, all of which rhyme, all of which are consistent, even though they serve different purposes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ambassador. If I could make a super synthesis, good alignment between regions and the open working group, the more commonalities, bottom line is more or less the same. Yet the point is, it has to be done in a way that there is regional ownership, because the implementation is going to have a national, a sub-regional, a regional dimension. So the question of how will this all be put together in terms of what happens is still a question that is up for negotiations. Good alignment, but a number of issues that are already indicated as not being there: population dynamics, resiliency, regional integration, and a number of other issues. So we will now move into the comments to our discussion, to our panelists, and our discussions. First person, excuse me, to highlight the issue of time. I'm obliged to say that you have around 4 minutes for your presentation. Minister Sihasak Phuangkatgoe, the Acting Minister of Foreign Affairs of Thailand. You have the floor, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to thank all the panelists for sharing their thoughts and their contribution. Well, In the region of Asia Pacific, I guess in terms of commonalities, what obviously we see is that the level of development and economic prosperity has not been even. I think the increased development gap is a major challenge facing the Asia Pacific region because of its rapid economic growth. So we do need to address the development gap, especially by enhancing development cooperation within the region, and also by increasing the capacity of countries to have the means to implement the development agenda. And when I talk about means of implementation, this means, you know, access to financial resources, capacity building, science, technology, innovation, and sharing of knowledge and best practices. So I think that's very important. Second, the deepening regional integration in Asia Pacific, which has driven the increased prosperity of the region, has also led to increased migration flows. And this is a challenge that we have to deal in the region. In Thailand alone, we play host to about 4 million migrant workers. It's a major challenge. So how do we manage the challenge of migration in a way that brings about the benefits of economic growth while ensuring full respect for human rights? So I think this requires strengthening of migration policies on the part of countries and international cooperation as well. So the other development challenge is that of aging society and changing demographic trends resulting from fertility decline and increased longevity. So obviously many countries will have to think about migration policy and think about how to better handle the aging population through social security measures, healthcare systems, protection of older people's rights and interests. And the fourth point is the point that was already made by Madam Akhtar, is that Asia Pacific is the most disaster-prone region. So we have to incorporate disaster preparedness and risk reduction into the development agenda, especially the SDGs and the post-2015 development agenda that we're formulating now. Fifth, Asia Pacific is also a very diverse region, consisting of developing countries, including least developed, landlocked developing countries, and small island developing states. So the post-2015 development agenda should address specific concerns, especially of the small island developing states, because of the impact of climate change and intense natural disasters. Now, on the question of how the SDGs and the agenda will impact on policy and trends in respective regions, I believe that SDGs and development agenda can have a profound impact if they are universal and applicable to all, enjoy broad political support, and integrate all three dimensions of sustainable development, and especially based on a people-centered and rights-based approach that ensures equality, equity, and accessibility in terms of development gains for all. The final point that I'd like to make is that in this effort, states alone cannot succeed, so we need to really strengthen regional multi-stakeholder partnership involving the private sector, civil society, and academia. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you. Thank you very much. His Excellency, Mr. Shahidul Haq, Foreign Secretary of Bangladesh. You have the floor, Minister Secretary.
Mr. President, Mr. Moderator, and distinguished delegates, it's very difficult if you come towards the end of the list and when you thought of saying things which have already been said. So nevertheless, I'll try and make something out of whatever has been said. Asia-Pacific shares more than half of the populations with very large economies. And recent studies suggest that Asia's emergence is exerting an inescapable gravitational pull with consequential impact on the development debate and the architecture that we are talking about. Instead of going into the priorities, which has already been said by distinguished Executive Secretary of ESCAP and my dear colleague from the Thai, Permanent Secretary of Thailand, I would rather look at more methods of realizing those goals, which is has also been highlighted by the Executive Secretary in terms of regionalism. Now, while implementing MDGs, it was obvious that regionalism and corresponding regional cooperation and bodies played a catalytic role. Similarly, to realize SDGs, the role, space, and the current level of engagements of the regional cooperation would deserve our special attention. And here I'm drawing the attention of distinguished delegates as to how important the regional specificity and regional cooperation are. To secure shared prosperity beyond 2015, political commitment and leadership to the regional cooperation would be crucial. However, the current nature and working of the regional bodies in the Asia-Pacific is unlikely to deliver or cope with the new and emerging demands or the expectation that we are likely to have once we have the SDGs or whatever structure be decided upon. Indeed, therefore, there's a need, and perhaps there's a need for a hybrid organization, hybrid regional cooperations, which is inclusive, mutually beneficial, and which can address both the hard and the soft issues, all types. Keeping in view of the imperatives of the knowledge-driven economy and the social setting, and to attain sustained, inclusive, and equitable growth, we would need to be a creative, bold body, irrespective of our level of development and political commitment. Mr. Moderator, there's an experience that we have in South Asia, and I would like to share with you, where we, in South Asia, within the SAARC, we tried and looked at, through a very consultative manner, all the MDGs. And we came up with a 22 SAARC development goal to give a more regional context to the global goals. And that has taught us a number of things. First, while implementing the MDGs, we didn't have a regional structure which could support the global structure in terms of implementing the MDGs. And perhaps it's time that we need, we look at that very seriously when we would be required to implement much broader, inclusive, and challenging MDGs. Mr. Moderator, I'm drawing the importance of the regional public goods and the whole issue of region-specific implementation process. Across the landscape of a series of regional cooperation in Asia-Pacific, we would have to agree on a practical measures to deepen connectivity. So here I'm linking the whole issue of regionalism with connectivity. In all its forms, connectivity must be recognized as a mean to connect people, ideas, cultures, production, and distribution chain, as well as bring in peace and stability in the region to adopt a logical, wider, non-conventional view of connectivity. For instance, incorporating energy and modern digital connectivity beyond the known multimodal physical connectivity. In other ways, weak connectivity and regulatory barriers quite often restricts movement of goods, services, people, and investment in the region or in the sub-region, and thus constrains our individual and collective efforts to end poverty, inequality, and disparity. Let me illustrate. First, the multi-pronged physical connectivity helps to unlock potentials of hitherto unexposed territories. In our region, the ongoing work to overland connect India, China, Bangladesh, and Myanmar is an innovative way of cooperating within a very unusual sub-regional context. Second, multimodal connectivity, in addition to the economic development, can also enhance peace and stability and people-to-people contact. That is where we recognize the importance of regional cooperation, contributing to peace, rule of law, stability, and progress. Indeed, bring a mindful of national sensitivities. Distinguished delegates, over the past decade, Asia-Pacific has witnessed a relatively stable political and economic environment. Yet, as we look at the menu of undertakings to further regional transformation, And while sustaining the development gains, we will have to address the growing and unforeseen risks, vulnerabilities, and uncertainties in many areas, such as climate change. It has been mentioned a number of times this morning. Beyond the intense discussion of UNFCCC, we must acknowledge the effect of climate change on people's lives and livelihood, in particular, its overall negative impact on GDP, and even possibilities of wiping out our precious development gains. Equally important is to keep in view a dynamic recognition of differential circumstances and needs of countries and the vulnerable segments within the population in Asia. Mr. Moderator, I'm coming to an end. In addressing these challenges, due emphasis will have to be given to adoption of a broad-based and inclusive partnership. So you have the regional cooperation, you have the connectivity. What you need is to create a partnership which has been also recognized in the MDGs and in the current debate. But we need partnership at various levels, sub-regional, national, and regional, and involving different actors, both governments, academia, private sector, and philanthropy. At the end, may I recall the five transformative shifts. I think we need to remind ourselves those are extremely thought-provoking and exciting ideas that was eminently brought forth by the high-level panel last year, which are equally important for Asia-Pacific. Even the Millennium Declaration, Mr. Moderator, if we could recall, resolved for establishment of a, quote, just and lasting peace all over the world, unquote. We have seen how absence of peace and stability and oblique of natural disaster could erode development gains almost overnight. It is therefore we'll have to stand up to build peaceful, nonviolent, moderate societies capable of addressing effectively political, economic, and environmental risks. We also need to create effective, participatory, and accountable institutions, as well as to forge robust, inclusive, transparent, yet dynamic global partnership. This is a bold and a very difficult undertaking, but we need to commit to jointly undertake for making our future safe, secure, and economically vibrant. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And our next speaker is our dear friend, Ambassador Al-Nasser, former President of the General Assembly and Ambassador here in New York, who is now UN High Representative for the Alliance of Civilization. Ambassador, you have the floor.
Thank you so much. I am really delighted to see you moderating this important meeting, and I thank you for your friendship. I would like to start by just mentioning the connection we see between the mandate of the Alliance of Civilizations and issues of sustainable development on the post-2015 development agenda. As we are all aware, there are a number of crisis situations around the world that are having a profound impact on the abilities of people in certain regions to achieve sustainable development goals where cultural, religious, and ethnic conflicts prevail. There can be no doubt that religious, ethnic, and civil unrest fester in these conditions of poverty and where key resources such as energy, food, land, and water are lacking. We also know that the fight for such resources and sometimes disguised behind a mask of ethnic or religious justifications. We must come to grips with such issues if the post-2015 agenda is to have a real meaning. A revitalized role in this regard must be identified for the regional institutions, since the spillover effects are indeed regional and constitute across border threats. We should emphasize that we are not starting from scratch in understanding the role of regional institutions in implementing sustainable development or addressing other problems of regional scope. They are not newcomers to this process. They have been with us right from the first conference in Rio in 1992. The Rio Plus 20 outcome document recognized progress, and sustainable development at the regional, national, subnational, and local levels, they noted that efforts to achieve sustainable development have been reflected in the regional, national, and subnational policies and plans, and through the development and implementation of international, regional, and sub-regional agreements and commitments. UNAOC has also undertaken several regional initiatives to increase the mutual support and cooperation among countries, since we believe that there is no development with security and no stability without harmony. The purpose of the regional strategies, broadly speaking, is to adapt UNAOC's global mission, aims, and commitments to regional conditions, challenges, and needs. It exists to reinforce a dynamic partnership among all relevant international and regional organizations and stakeholders, including member states, civil society organizations, and the private sector. This is achieved through certain and open forums of their discussion on UNOC's relevant matters. To be clear, these forums for open discussion are, by necessity, on at the level of the regions and the governments of the regions they serve. The concept of the regional strategies is to create a political tool to introduce and consolidate good governance practices and effective policies around cultural diversity and human rights for all citizens. It was made clear that such a tool needs to be context-sensitive according to the specific circumstances, individual countries and regions. I believe that one of the issues we should address in this discussion is how do we incorporate and take advantage of what has been done at the regional level over the last 20 years. Surely a good deal has been learned about implementation and what is achieved at the regional level. How do we and how do the region access and act on such information? There is also the question of what national governments can do better to assist regional institutions in their implementation efforts. Let me just say one or two words about regional priorities as they have been reflected on the regional discussions. Clearly, Asia and the Pacific and Latin America and the Caribbean have given high priority to income inequality and graduation poverty, as have the other regions, although they may have phrased it in a different ways. It is a major issue for our development agenda if a small group of people increasingly own most of the capital in their countries, while most of the citizens in the same countries are dwelling under extreme poverty. A world with diminishing middle class, restricted mobility, and increasing levels of poverty is not sustainable. Both Africa and Asia and the Pacific regions mention in the importance of natural resources management. This is particularly important for Africa because, as UNU report stated, while the 21st century has witnessed sustained demand for Africa's natural resources, oil, minerals, and other raw materials, the continent continues to lack effective institutional capacity to manage these resources sustainably. The Arab region gave special attention to goals that take national diversity into account and on governance, while include strengthening the institutional and legal frameworks, fostering equitable participation in decision-making, and promoting effective participation of civil society and the private sector in the decision-making processes. As mentioned above, the importance of peace and security was considered of utmost priority. The Secretary General, as his report, A/68/79, mainstreaming the three dimensions of sustainable development, and mentions that most of the regional institutions currently maintain sectoral divisions and committees, making integration of the three pillars of sustainable development problematic. Indeed, from a political and technical point of view, most countries and regional institutions have found it difficult to deal with the complexity represented by sustainable development. Because of sustainable development is about anything, it is about a relationship and integration between issues. Just the last few words, please. Having said that, I would like to recall before I conclude that at the focal points meeting of the UNAOCs held in Doha, Qatar, last April, under the theme Peace for Prosperity and Sustainable Development, we recognize the multifaceted challenges and the interconnectivity of sustainable development in our preeminent document, the Doha Declaration. It is also worth mentioning that in our sixth global forum to be held in Bali on 29 and 30th of August, we have a breakout session on the role of culture in the formulation of a new sustainable development. And I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your presentation. And I give the floor to Ms. Gigi Francisco, Global Coordinator of the Development Alternatives for Women in the New Era, DAWN. And chair of the International Studies Department of Miriam College in the Philippines.
Yeah, thank you.
I would like just to make two comments. One is that in my experience, the intellectual role that DAWN has played in the civil society movements is quite extraordinary. I had an opportunity of seeing it when we were organizing the social summit. And the second thing is that I would like to pick on an issue that Ambassador Nasser mentioned, because he highlighted the questions of inequality, as most of you have on the table, and the foreign minister of Thailand and also the state secretary for Bangladesh mentioned that there were new and emerging demands. And I think that we, in giving the floor to civil society, I also want to recall that there is an enormous amount of social demands on all of these issues, and they have to be dealt with politically. But I think that the UN system has also to assume the fact that the expectations are enormous, and the doubts are also there as to, you know, how far this is going to be able to orient the world towards the types of problems that are putting people on the streets in many of our countries. So I just wanted to mention that because it is a political dimension that we have to have present. Ms. Gigi, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator, for your kind words. Regional commissions reported that countries in their areas are making efforts toward greater equality and poverty eradication, and with some governments feeling the setback from urgent as well as slow on-site climate change and disaster-related issues. But they also claim that such capacity depend by and large on a strong and coherent international development agenda, wherein global macroeconomic policy coordination and policy coherence in support of sustainable development is enhanced. Toward ensuring a paradigm shift, the SDGs must squarely address global systemic issues, among which are eliminating distortions in international trade and imbalances in trade agreements such as found in the TPPA and TAFTA, improving regulation and monitoring of global financial markets and institutions, and ensuring that all countries participate equally in decision-making, strengthening implementation of those regulations that enable countries to impose temporary capital restrictions, ensure countries can negotiate agreements on temporary debt standstills between debtors and creditors, and for poor and vulnerable countries which are saddled with unsustainable debt, guaranteeing expanded eligibility for debt relief and concessional financing. Moreover, SDGs must adopt country-by-country reporting standards for all transnational corporations, expand and strengthen UNCTAD's principles for lending and borrowing to cover private investment, and agreement on binding corporate and agree on binding corporate accountability rules as decided by the HRC on June 26, 2014, including sharing of risk and returns in public-private partnerships. And finally, on tax and avoidance, convert the UN Committee Experts on International Tax Cooperation into an intergovernmental body. Further, implement and operationalize the Warsaw International Mechanism for Loss and Damage that SIDS countries had strongly advocated for. By addressing global systemic issues based on the principle on the principles maximum available resources for the promotion of human rights, including the right to development, and of common but differentiated responsibilities, and considering the particular vulnerabilities and challenges of small island developing states, landlocked developing countries, middle-income countries, least developed countries, and other countries in special situations, resources will be freed, flexibility within policy spaces will be utilized for development, and overall equality between developed and developing countries and generations will be better and responsibly achieved. Women's inclusion, whether through language or non-discrimination, equality, or mainstreaming, is prominently exhorted across all regional reports. Gender equality and women's and girls' empowerment have been described in the reports as prerequisite for sustainable development in ESCAP, essential for achieving sustainable development in the ECE report, must have concrete goals and targets for achieving real gender equality and women participation at all levels of policy making in the ESQUA report, and economic empowerment of young people and women through equal opportunity to ownership and control of economic resources, technology markets, land, property, and inheritance rights, as found in the ECA report. Women's groups have, more than these, women's groups have been advocating for other issues on women, and in particular to guarantee rural women's individual and collective rights to land, abode, and assets. In this regard, we welcome the International Declaration of the Rights of Peasants passed by the Human Rights Council on June 27, 2014. I refer to two parts of PARAS 93 and 96 of the G77 and China Declaration in Bolivia. I know that many of you come from the capitals and missions of this important group of countries, and as a representative of the women's major group, I call on you to further build on these commitments on women's rights and gender equality. We recall, and I quote, we recall the outcome of the United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development and decide to accelerate the implementation of our respective commitments as contained in the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, as well as Agenda 21, the Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action, the United Nations Millennium Declaration and Program of Action of the 1994 International Conference on Population and Development. We also recall our respective commitments under General Assembly Resolution 61-143 and other relevant resolutions on this matter, recognizing that violence against women seriously violates all human rights. Finally, to say that we continue to look forward toward a strong but transparent HLPF that has its own bureau and secretariat, robust partnerships with major groups, CSOs, and other stakeholders, and where solid data and regional realities and regional consultations will inform its work. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I have two requests for the floor, after which I will give the opportunity to the panelists to say a final word. We're near the closing of our time, so I will proceed to apparently three. Huh? Okay, I have three requests for the floor. First, I give the floor to the representative of Chile, Member of Parliament, Mr. León, who I have to say is, I'm sorry that I make this personal reference, it happened to be real. We were both together in a very difficult period of Chile when we had to recover democracy, and I want to highlight the role, political role that he played. Maestro, tiene la palabra.
Mi querido moderador, yo quiero hacer más que una exposición, hacerle consulta a algunos de los miembros del panel. Todo lo que estamos acá, estamos de acuerdo que post-2015 tenemos desarrollo económico, social y ambiental. Pero a mí me preocupa particularmente ver las cifras que uno conoce a través de distintos organismos internacionales y de la prensa internacional, que en el año 2015-2016, la primera fuente energética va a ser el carbón. Sí, va a volver a ser el carbón por los precios del petróleo. Entonces, yo no tengo la respuesta. Pero hay una cuestión sí que tengo claro, que si la principal fuente energética va a ser el carbón, ¿de qué manera vamos a poder avanzar en contener el calentamiento global? ¿De qué manera vamos a poder avanzar en prevenir los riesgos de siniestro, de desastre, que todos sabemos que a los que más afecta es a la gente que menos tiene? Entonces, esa inquietud es lo que quiero preguntarle a algunos de los miembros del panel, cómo lo ven y de qué manera podemos, ¿no es cierto?, ir pensando también en aquello. Gracias, señor moderador.
Muchísimas gracias. Tiene la palabra el representante de la Federación Rusa. Dos minutos, estamos ya llegando al final y quiero dar oportunidad a los panelistas de decir unas palabras. Representante de la Federación Rusa.
Спасибо, господин председатель. Мы сожалеем, что отведено время всего лишь на региональное сотрудничество 1.5 часа, и для выступления стран осталось всего 10 минут. Придаем большое значение вкладу региональных экономических комиссий в формирование глобальной повестки дня в области развития 2015 года. Считаем важным наладить межправительственные региональные механизмы для приспособления упомянутой глобальной повестки дня к конкретным условиям в отдельных регионах. Призываем региональные комиссии развернуть соответствующие процессы для обеспечения подготовки субстантивных вкладов в работу политического форума высокого уровня по устойчивому развитию и других мониторинговых инструментов под эгидой КОСОС и Генассамблеи ООН. Исходим из того, что данная работа позволит комиссиям полноценно выполнить статью 100 итогового документа конференции Рио плюс 20. Состоявшийся на прошлой неделе в рамках политического форума насыщенный и заинтересованный диалог с руководством региональных комиссий подтвердил большую заинтересованность государств-членов ООН в работе комиссий. Признательны исполнительным комиссий за представленную и развернутую информацию о практической и ориентированной на результат деятельности комиссий по достижению устойчивого развития в регионах. Считаем, что прошедшая дискуссия по вопросам существа может служить образцом многостороннего диалога по социально-экономической повестке дня. В этом контексте у нас вызывает недоумение стремление некоторых делегаций преуменьшить роль региональных комиссий. Считаем подобную линию недальновидной. Со своей стороны убеждены в том, что региональные комиссии играют и должны продолжать играть важную роль в организации межгосударственного сотрудничества в области устойчивого экономического развития. Отмечаем растущую востребованность ЕИК ООН как глобального центра по согласованию и эффективному обслуживанию правовых международных инструментов для разработки и обслуживания международных правовых. Известно, что ЕИК ООН обслуживает 60 международных соглашений и конвенций. Обслуживает международных соглашений и конвенций регионального и глобального охвата. На ее базе также разрабатываются прикладные рекомендации в области транспорта, энергетики, защиты окружающей среды, инновации в экономике. Приветствуем взятый из КАТА курс на создание надлежащих условий для интенсификации экономических связей и развертывания интеграционных процессов внутри Азиатско-Тихоокеанского региона. И последнее, господин председатель. Убеждены, что оказание технического содействия является одной из ключевых составляющих работы региональных комиссий. Усилия комиссии на указанном направлении способствуют реализации государственными членами права на развитие. Право на развитие, right for development, нивелирует различия в уровнях экономического развития и ведет к повышению производительного потенциала и конкурентоспособности регионального хозяйственных систем в целом. Для достижения этих целей Россия ежегодно выделяет по 1,2 миллиона долларов в ЕИК и в ИСКАТА. В ЕИК ООН и ИСКАТА. ИСКАП. Спасибо, господин председатель.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your understanding for the time constraint. Children and youth representative, a major group, again, very short, please. You have the floor.
Thank you, moderator. This has been an informative discussion about different regions and the dimensions in regards to regional priorities and targets. It is clear for us that the regional bodies are crucial in order to implement a truly transformative agenda. Hence, the difference in regions must be factored in all SDGs, targets, and indicators, even if this means that number of goals and targets cannot be as few as intended as they were in the Millennium Development Goals. The impact of the SDGs and the agenda on policies and trends in the respective regions is shown by the African Union in that many African nations share the same idea about financing and priorities, while small island development states feature heavily upon disaster resilience. In closing, I have a brief question. What way would be a better method to focus on all priorities of regions and their needs for implementation and their capacity while keeping the full breadth of the SDGs without watering down the goals?
Thank you. Thank you very much. And we close with Zambia again. Zambia has the floor, very short.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. In an attempt to address the practical policy and the institutional implications of addressing economic, social, and the environmental dimensions in an integrated manner, the heads of state and government and high-level representatives having met at Rio in Brazil 2012, the world is highly expectant that new commitments will be ensured for global committed to sustainable development and to ensure the promotion of an economically, socially, and environmentally sustained future for our planet and for present and future generations. Indeed, poverty is perceived to be the greatest global challenge facing the world today, and an indispensable requirement for sustainable development and freeing humanity from poverty and hunger is regarded as a matter of urgency. Though the Rio Plus 20 did not elaborate on the process of arriving at the SDGs guidance, the guidance was provided that the SDGs should be limited in number, inspirational, and easy to implement. The goals should be in a balanced way, address all three dimensions in sustainable development. Without an ambitious outcome in the upcoming negotiations, the world risks expanding the gaps between now and 2020, during which the window to achieve a safe world will close, threatening the whole world. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We have one question directed to the panel. I think that I would ask our friend Mr. Korolek to deal with that issue. Madam Shamshad has said that she does not need to intervene. Those who want to intervene, we would have about a minute and a half to do so. But I will give first the floor to Mr. Korolek on the specific issue on energy that was raised.
Thank you, Chairman. I will try to answer the question asked by representative of Chile. If we read Climate Convention, the Climate Convention is about the reducing of emissions. It's not about that or another type of energy. It's about the reducing of emissions, particularly of CO2, but also other impacting gases or emissions. International Energy Agency is stating that fossil fuels will remain with us in a quite long perspective. So what we have to focus during those climate negotiations, particularly ahead of the Paris Agreement, is to ask ourselves how we can reduce emissions, how we can do that. We can do that with focusing more on energy efficiency. We can focus more on new technologies. We can focus more on new investments in renewables, but also in new investments with new technologies on fossil fuels. And I think that is a direct answer for your question, Ambassador. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any the panelists, would you? Yo, usted tiene la palabra, ministro.
Bien, quisiera hacer un comentario final a propósito de las diferentes consideraciones que han hecho los comentaristas, que me parece que una matriz común que señalan todos ellos es el carácter asimétrico que representa el desarrollo en los diversos países y de los cuales no escapa pues países como los nuestros de América Latina de renta media, que, como señalaba, han conseguido logros importantes en términos de generación de riqueza sin que esto se convierta en calidad de vida adecuada para todos sus habitantes. Entonces, pienso que hay diferentes retos que abordar, que son ineludibles y que tienen diferente orden de asuntos. Uno de ellos es precisamente lo que se ha establecido como prioridad en el marco de los Objetivos del Desarrollo Sostenible, que es el combate a la pobreza y a la desigualdad. Pero también para hacer esto posible es necesario el fortalecimiento institucional sobre la base de la profundización de las relaciones democráticas entre el Estado y su ciudadanía, mejorar la capacidad de la gestión de las políticas públicas y sobre todo pienso un tema que no se ha abordado y que es importante señalar, el combate contra la corrupción. Estas estrategias deben ser desde luego de responsabilidad nacional. Sin embargo, tiene un marco también de alcance regional e internacional, por eso tan importante conversar sobre estos temas en estos foros. Un tema que me parece señalar de gran trascendencia es la responsabilidad que tienen los países hoy en día de asumir la realidad de la estructura demográfica de nuestros países. Creo que eso va a tener que atenderse desde el ámbito de las políticas públicas en general y particularmente desde las políticas sociales. Y qué decir de la gestión del riesgo socioambiental que pasa por el tema tan trascendente y tan difícil de resolver como el que aportó el señor comentarista de Chile, que es la definición sobre la matriz energética de los países, donde creo que es un tema muy, muy complejo que atiende a intereses diversos que hay al interior de la sociedad e incluso a modificar formas de gestión del espacio, de los recursos naturales, porque muchas de las posibilidades de fuentes energéticas alternativas y limpias están dentro de áreas consideradas además de conservación. Entonces, este es un tema complejo y yo creo que, por lo menos en el caso de Costa Rica, será uno de los temas trascendentes, profundos y difíciles posiblemente de resolver, que es cómo encontrar alternativas para la producción de energía. Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias, ministra. Ambassador Marupin.
Thank you, moderator. No, just to put emphasis that for Africa, eradication of poverty is the main focus, and human development and all other things is a means towards that end, the betterment of human life. And economies have to grow in order to be able to support the gains that will have been made in the MDGs and those that will be made during post-2015 development agenda. They have to be sustained so that there are no reverses. I want to emphasize that gender equality and women empowerment and youth empowerment and engagement is very important for us in Africa. We are a young, someone was talking about aging population. We have a young population, very young, heavy on young people. And addressing their situation is very important. Illicit financial flows, I didn't go into details of financing and so on, but illicit financial flows really have to be stopped, and that needs global cooperation. President Mbeki has shown that about 50 to 60 billion is being lost to Africa per year. Others have disputed that, but have not cited an alternative figure. So just to conclude, Mr. Moderator, by saying that Agenda 2663, which is a broader framework and a 50-year framework, will be the vehicle for making sure that global development agenda is implemented in Africa. Thank you very much. I think I'll stop here.
Thank you. Thank you so much. The Executive Secretary of ESCAP, Shamshad Akhtar, had asked for a point.
Thank you. I just wanted to acknowledge very much the comments made on the Regional Commission's role. I believe, as a representative of the Regional Commission, that it's quite critical to recognize and better integrate the Regional Commissions in the dialogue in New York, particularly as the evidence that I presented shows amply that every region has its own special characteristics, and there is a phenomenal amount of diversity. Also, the stage of level of development in which countries are. Ultimately, we may have one set of goals, but countries will have to adapt these, keeping their own realities and priorities.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And let me just finalize by thanking all the panelists for what I found to be a very comprehensive way of dealing with the two questions we had, the lead speakers and the comments that you have received. I want to thank the interpreters for giving us a small space to finalize this meeting, and to say that if something is clear from this meeting is the significance of the regional issues, the regional perspective, and the need that that be present in the manner in which we organize what the social development goals will eventually be, the significance of regional organizations and of regional integration as a powerful instrument to reach those goals, and the importance of acknowledging the role that the UN has at the regional level. Certainly the regional commissions, which have the basic mandate, but all of the regional dimensions of the international organizations, so that the regional presence of the UN as a whole, with the regional commissions installed in the regions and close to the realities of those regions, is rather enormous. So if we want to focus on the regions, there is an enormous installed capacity that has a knowledge and an experience of what is going on in the different regions, sub-regions, etc., which means that the technical knowledge, the know-how about regions, is probably one of the biggest that you have in the public system in the world today. And that is a very important thing to keep in mind, an enormous installed capacity to be able to analyze regions from all of the different perspectives of the international institutions, all of this expressed in the presence of the regional commissions in each one of our regions. So, Mr. President, we have completed our panel. Thank you for your company. Thank you to all of you for the interest you've shown in this issue, which has the importance that I think I have just mentioned. And I'm glad to give the floor back to you, and you are our leader at this moment.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank His Excellency Juan Somavia for ably steering our discussions. I thank all the distinguished panelists, active lead discussants, and all delegations for a very constructive exchange of views. Ladies and gentlemen, before we adjourn, I have a little housekeeping announcement. I would like to remind the delegations that the high-level political forum will continue its work tomorrow morning in this chamber. In accordance with our program, the forum will hold two ministerial dialogues. The first dialogue on the topic of long-term measures to make poverty eradication irreversible and reduce inequalities will be held at around 10:10 a.m. following the remarks by the Minister of Environment and Green Development of Mongolia and President of the United Nations Environment Assembly. The second panel discussion will be held from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. on the topic of international cooperation for sustainable development. With that, the meeting is adjourned.